Nicolet Bank is honored to support all who strive to make communities great. Newsmakers is a production of Wisconsin Eye. To keep programs like this free and accessible to all, please consider a charitable gift to wisi.org/donate or text WISI to 44321. This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. Republican leaders in the state Senate are kicking off the 117th legislative session with expectations for a major tax cut for Wisconsinites, along with hopes for success on issues like medical marijuana and the Monday processing bill. While Republicans have a slimmer margin of majority in the chamber this session, they are confident of some big wins. Here to talk about GOP priorities are Senate President Mary Felskowski and Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemahue. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Well, congratulations are in order for your reelection to Majority Leader and Senate President. Congratulations to you.
Thank you.
So, Inauguration Day was last Monday. You've both been in the legislature for over a decade now. Mm-hmm. Did last Monday feel any different? Was there anything different about that day?
Well, I was a little bit more nervous than I have been on other inauguration days with the role of Senate President, you know, and taking the gavel. But I thought it went well. I thought it was a very positive day.
How about you? Was it different this time around?
Not this time. This is my third time now being up in the Majority Leader's chair at the beginning of a session for inauguration. So the first time, I was a little nervous. But
it's old hat now.
Yeah. And it's a little different when you're just didn't go through a re-election either, like I did. So I didn't go through a re-election, so I didn't get to go sign the book at the beginning because I wasn't getting sworn in. So it's a little, not quite as, I mean, it's still great with the pomp and circumstance and the whole ceremony behind it, but it's my fifth time doing that, so.
You feel like you're ready to get to work.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
I know that in November, Republicans held on to the majority, but there's a slimmer margin now, 18 to 15 seats, because Democrats flipped those four seats under the new maps. Does that shift in seats change any expectations for what you think you can get done in the chamber this session?
No, I don't think so. We have you know, traditionally, it's been very tight in the state Senate. When I was first elected, it was 1914, so we're only one seat off of that majority. We're still in the majority. Republican, you know, Trump won statewide. The Assembly came back with 54 seats. So I think voters sort of understood or went to the polls on Republican messaging, on securing the border, on inflation. They just having a hard time meeting their budget needs and things like that. So that's why, as you mentioned in the introduction, one of the things we're really going to focus on is reducing taxes, making it easy for families to buy those eggs, which are now $5 for a dozen, things like that.
Democrats say that since they now have more seats, that they're expecting a greater say in the agenda. I know in your speech as Senate President, you talked about facilitating even stronger debate. Do you think that this change in the number of seats means that the minority party will have a greater say in that chamber?
So if we look back historically, like I had my staff run back to 1991, the average is an 18 majority by the Republicans when they're in control, and the average for the Dems is 17. We actually ran it back to 91, all the different sessions. So we are now in a typical majority. So this is normal. When we had a supermajority, that isn't quite normal. So we're a strong Republican majority in the Wisconsin State Senate. And I think, as Devin has said, if you look at what our Democratic colleagues ran on, I mean, Jamie Wall, Jody Simkin-Habish, Sarah Kieske.
The new senators.
Yep. They ran on cutting taxes. They ran on public safety. They ran on a lot of issues that are very important to the Republican caucus. So I think as we move forward, I expect a lot of bipartisan votes.
You had some pretty big bipartisan wins in the last session around the Brewer Stadium, shared revenue, some increases in school funding. What do you think is ripe for bipartisan wins in this upcoming session?
I think Mary just mentioned it. I think we all want to give, when you have a $4 billion surplus, that's taxpayer money sitting in Madison earning interest rather than in the pocketbooks of those who are paying the taxes. So, I think hopefully we can get by a bipartisan tax cut, middle-class tax cut. We tried it at the end of last session using, you know, Governor Evers' parameters. At the $150,000 mark for, you know, a double-income family or married
filers
jointly. So, I think there's, if you look at over history, over 90% of the bills that pass have bipartisan support and are signed by the governor. So I think there's opportunity to work together. We're not going to agree on everything, but we'll get a lot of good stuff done.
In the state Senate, there's oftentimes this talk of this rule of 17. Can you explain what the rule of 17 is?
The rule of 17 is something that some of our caucus members have talked about, that you need a majority
of
Republican votes to pass. Last session, there was some really good legislation that we were working on, and unfortunately we couldn't get to 17 votes on a couple of them, but they were great for the state of Wisconsin, and the majority of our caucus supported it. It just wasn't 17 members of our caucus. So I'll take that same approach going into this session, that we'll try to get 17 Republican votes, but if it's something that's vital to Wisconsin, something that can really improve Wisconsin, and the vast majority of our caucus supports it, we'll move forward with it. Last year at this point, I didn't know that the Brewers was going to be a thing. We didn't know that till the governor's budget address. Mary can probably talk about this better because she was working on the shared revenue bill. I don't think she thought that shared revenue, she was working on it, but it wasn't the bill that it ended up being. She was just trying to help out her local townships.
I didn't know I was going to fold in Milwaukee's pension crisis.
So it's hard to talk now about what you think those big wins will be. Do you anticipate then that the state budget might pass with 17 votes? Will you need some Democratic votes to get the budget through?
Hopefully we can pass it with 17 votes. The first budget that I worked on when I was the majority leader, we had 23 votes.
Right.
I think three Democrats voted for that budget, if I remember right. So that's always our
reasonable
goal.
Reasonable to get 17 Republican votes on the budget this time around.
Yep.
Speaking of the budget, I know you have been talking about tax cuts. Can you talk a little bit more about what you hope that tax cut package will be coming out of your caucus?
Mm-hmm. I think from what we saw this fall with voters, all voters struggling with inflation. I know the speaker's been out there talking about retiree income tax cuts, but we want to give tax cuts to everybody, not just one segment of taxpayers. So broad-based income tax reductions, we can do some targeted things like maybe exempting some of retiree income from taxes, but everybody's struggling out there.
Highest tax bracket needs a tax cut?
I would like to see it. I would love to see a flat tax in Wisconsin. They have one in Illinois, which is run by Democrats, and their flat tax is lower than our top two tax brackets.
You've said
you aren't going to reintroduce
a flat tax proposal this year.
I have said that, but I think we have the wrong governor for that. But that doesn't mean that we can't start flattening taxes all around. But if you reduce expand the third tax bracket into the second tax bracket, everybody who's working full time passes through that.
And that's collapse those two tax brackets.
Either collapse them, reduce rates in different ones, expand incomes in one of those tax brackets or the other one. There's many ways that we can do it. Hopefully, unlike last session, the governor is willing to work with us and not just do gimmicky tax cuts, but actually do real tax cuts.
The governor did veto the reductions proposed by Republicans last time for reductions in the top two tax brackets. Why should he sign a similar tax cut this time around?
So we're sitting on a $4 billion surplus, okay? And we have constituents out there that are hurting. Like, eggs are $4 plus, $4.60-some a dozen. And when we talked about the tax cuts, the last tax cut we were talking about affected senior citizens, people that are on fixed incomes, as well as think about a family of four. And, you know, we said, Governor Evers said middle class is up to $150,000 for a family of four, okay, two income earners. But that's everybody below that also. So our tax cuts would have literally given money back to people that qualify for food stamps. And Governor Evers said, nope, you don't get your money back. So he is literally sitting on people's money that qualify for food stamps.
How much of that $4 billion surplus should be dedicated toward a tax cut?
A substantial amount of it. I don't know exactly what that number is. We'll get new, I think we're getting new Fiscal Bureau numbers in the next couple weeks. And then again in April, we'll get new numbers. So as those numbers progress and we see how, you know, Fiscal Bureau is usually pretty conservative with their estimates going out 1 year and even more for 2 years. But the closer we get to June when we need to get that budget done, we'll have a good idea of the available resources that we have to work with, you know, increasing funding in some areas, but also reducing taxes.
And do you, think about two-thirds of that surplus should go toward a tax cut?
I'm not going to speak for our entire caucus. I would just use the term substantial. Until we have numbers, it's hard to say what it should be until we have our numbers to look at what is our revenues going to be coming in. But you asked before, why should he sign a tax cut? Mm-hmm. Governor Evers has his priorities. Giving some of these dollars back to our constituents is our priority. So let's come together and have those conversations.
Meet in the middle.
Yeah.
You talked at a WISC Politics event in December about wanting to use some of the surplus. You thought a good use was around infrastructure projects.
Yeah.
What's an example of an infrastructure project that you think is a good surplus funding
so
use?
So if there's one-time dollars, and that's kind of what we said, if there's one-time dollars, we're not going to build it into our base. You know, it's exactly what we did last time on joint finance. Infrastructure projects are our roads. You know, maybe some of the majors that we still have yet to do. When we talk to transportation, there's like going forward for 10 years, I think there's $1 billion of majors that have to be done. There's bridge projects that have to be done. There's always vertical projects that we need to do. There's maintenance and repairs. One-time projects, one-time dollars.
Funding. What about the rainy day fund? Do we need to protect against a future recession by putting more money in the rainy day fund?
Our rainy day fund, which when I was first elected was pretty close to zero. Mm-hmm. I think it was probably zero when Mary was first elected.
Was.
She's been around a little longer than I have. But, you know, having $2 billion in there, I think we're getting really close to $2 billion in there. I think that's a really think that's a really good number to have in there if we do hit a recession.
You've talked about the governor's 400-year veto that raises revenue limits on school funding, per pupil revenue limits, and you've been looking at what the Supreme Court might decide, and you've said that will affect how you look at public school funding moving forward and what happens with that veto. Does that mean that schools should expect no new spendable resources if that veto stands?
I mean, that was a major part of what we did in education in the last budget. We did some
increasing
other things on top
limit.
Of that, but you know, the last budget was the largest increase in history for K-12 education. So if that $325 each year is back in there, I think part of our debate will be how much of that do we fund in property taxes, maybe to try stay at that two-thirds funding for schools so it doesn't have the effect on property tax if every school district goes up to that $325 or levies that entire $325. I mean, there can be some various spending on top of that, looking at mental health or special ed, some things like that. We'll have that debate. But when you start off with, I mean, $325 each year over a two-year period is $1 billion,
right,
roughly.
Is that enough for schools?
That's my simple math doing it in my head. It's roughly $1 billion.
Governor Evers says that's not enough for schools.
That's a lot of new money for schools.
Mm-hmm. When you look at schools, you know, the DPI superintendent, public education advocates have said that this year will be the 16th year that public education from the state funding has not kept up with inflation rates. And they blame that on why there's so many school referendums. How do you explain the record number of communities going to referendum for school funding?
So everything in the state of Wisconsin and everything in a budget is a want and a need, okay? I was raised, you fund your needs first and then you fund your wants. School districts are independent and they can decide on what they're going to fund. I see school districts funding needs and I see school district funding wants. So that's local control.
So you think some of those referendums are about individual school districts funding beyond the needs?
They're funding what they feel is important to their district, and those are local decisions. And that's a way for the taxpayers to say, yes, we agree with those decisions, or no, we do not agree with those decisions.
You talked about potentially increasing special education funding. I know school districts have said that is a way that could prevent them from going to referendum if the state was contributing more. I think the reimbursement rate right now is around 33%. Do you think the state could get to two-thirds funding, 60%, or is that too high of a number?
That's probably way too expensive of a number to get to two-thirds. I think we've been making incremental progress over the last couple budgets, and you know, if we can do some more incremental movement, I think that'll be beneficial.
I know you've been talking at least about support for the Office of School Safety. A lot of legislators have weighed in after the school shooting here in Madison at Abundant Life Christian School. Do you think schools need more resources for school safety purposes?
So I think a lot of the districts are at very different places. You know, some districts have put a lot of capital infrastructure in place to, you know, secure their schools. Others have not done as much. So yes, I do think that we need to make sure that there's funding there to make sure that the schools have the resources they need to screen and make sure that their schools are safe.
You're interested in increases for the Office of School Safety?
I don't know about increases, but funding it,
yes.
Keeping it open. At its, I believe the at the district, the Attorney General's request, I think is sort of a reasonable amount, getting that funded. We did it at the end of last session to fund it through October to make sure that that funding was there. And I think it's also important to invest in mental health, which we've done recently, invested in mental health, opening up schools. I actually did a bill with Representative Tittle to let mental health professionals come into schools, break down those barriers.
What do you think we might see in mental health related to kids this session?
Yeah, I think we put $30 million or so into that into the last session. And if we keep making those investments, I think that will be good to help get the kids who need that help, that help.
I know yesterday the governor made an announcement about creating an Office of Violence Prevention, providing federal dollars toward $10 million in grants for that purpose. He also talked about including some major gun safety reforms in his budget. Are there any gun safety reforms that you think have support in the Senate Republican caucus?
Once again, I'd like to remind the governor that he's doing a budget address and not his policy vision for the state of Wisconsin. Gun safety.
That will be pulled out of the budget.
By referendums, you know, every other policy item that he puts into the budget is dead on arrival, at least through the budget process. You know, I think we forget what your actual question.
Gun safety reforms. Where's the support in the Republican caucus for any changes in there?
Well, I mean, if you look at all the tragedies that have occurred, I'm not sure what gun safety measures would have prevented them. You know, the one that just happened here in Madison, that child wasn't allowed to have a gun. I mean, it was illegal for that child to have a gun. So,
Speaker Voss says he's willing to look at background checks, for instance. Is that something that's worth discussion?
I mean, we can look at that.
What do you think, Senator Voss-Kelsey?
So I think, you know, one of the things is we have a system where a lot of laws are broken when it comes to the laws that are on the books. And I think there's a lot of frustration from legal gun owners that my colleagues, Governor Evers and a lot of my Democratic colleagues, just want more laws and more laws and more laws. And we don't enforce what's there. You know,
better enforcement is the answer?
So we see this, and I apologize, I'm going to pick on a lot of our large cities, Milwaukee, Madison. Enforce what's there. So the DAs and the judges need to crack down once police arrest people. Let's enforce what's there and then see the result of that, and then let's have a conversation.
Moving on to the UW system, I know you've already said that the UW system's request for $855 million is not going to happen based upon declining enrollment across campuses. Do you think there's more to be cut across the UW system?
You know, I think we need to take a really more 30,000-foot view of the UW system. I mean, we see the two-year campuses, which are really struggling, and some have closed down. Is that looking forward into our modern economy, is that needed in around the state of Wisconsin, the two-year campuses?
What's, you'd like to see them come back with a proposal that addresses that?
Well, I mean, I just think we need to look at it. I mean, what's the future of education? A lot of people are doing education online. You know, with low unemployment, people are going directly into the job force. You know, with automation and AI, there's such a need for technical skills in running. You know, my district is probably one of the heaviest manufacturing districts in the state of Wisconsin, with not just the Kohler Company, but food processing. And, it's heavy manufacturing, so you need skilled people. It's not manufacturing that people think about from the 1970s. It's fancy machinery that needs people who know how to fix computers and program computers and make sure they keep running.
So we're not really directing the system in that way, is what you're
saying?
Well,
I'm just saying we need a vision to make sure that the money that when we're using taxpayer money to subsidize, Madison does a great job in a lot of areas, engineers, a lot of different fields that they're filling that the need of, the medical college, getting, health professionals out, things like that, things that society really needs. But, maybe we don't need all four, as many four-year campuses. Maybe they need to be more specialized in their approach to meet the needs of what our economy and society needs.
I'd like to ask you about medical marijuana. What are the odds that that gets signed into law this session?
So I've had some preliminary conversations with the speaker. He is pretty dug in on his vision of having state-owned dispensaries. But yet we know it's DOA, dead on arrival.
In the Senate.
It is. And I've even spoken with some of his assembly colleagues that there's no way they're going to vote for a government-ran dispensary. So we are going to move forward in the Senate, and we've already talked to some bill authors in the Assembly, and we're going to move forward with a legislation that does not have state-owned dispensaries in them. There was a lot of things in the Speaker's bill last session that were really good. So we're going to go at it, and we'll see how the chips may fall.
You think you get 17 votes in the Republican caucus on that bill?
I think probably the biggest concern from members of our caucus who may not be as gung-ho about medical marijuana as Mary is that it's not a essentially backdoor recreational marijuana, that there's good structure, not as a state-run dispensary, but right, that doctors are prescribing it, and it's that it's actually being used for medicinal purposes.
Correct.
And I think if enough members feel comfortable with the framework of the bill that that's what it does, I think it does have an opportunity.
What about the Monday processing bill? That's a bill that didn't get across the finish line in the Senate last time around. Does it have better chances in this session?
I think I was the author of that bill. Well, I don't think I was the author of that bill when I was chair of the Elections Committee back in the past. I think there is some merit into looking at into that bill. But, if you look at the election that just occurred, Milwaukee wouldn't have reported their results at 2 in the morning if they didn't have to start over after loading in 30,000 ballots. And, and the city of Madison lost 200 ballots. So there's definitely some things we need to look at for election integrity and security going forward. But simply processing bills a day early, or ballots a day early, as long as there's oversight over that where both parties can watch and it's secure and they're not actually tabulating, and I see no problem
with
that.
Is that bill a priority this session, would you say?
It would be treated like any other bill. I'm not sure. I think Senator Stashold did it at one point or had interest in it. I haven't talked to him if he plans on introducing it. We'll see.
There's no elections-specific committee in the Senate this time around. Where would you anticipate a bill like that would be referred?
So I think we would talk to the bill author, and have that conversation. There's a couple. There's a government affairs committee, licensing, there's constitution, federalism, local government.
So lots of options.
There's lots of options.
Another priority for you last session was right of first refusal, the ROFR bill that would give utilities first dibs on transmission lines and projects in the state. Is that still a top priority for you?
It is. It is. And it's going to be an early priority. There's a new tranche of federal funding that's going into building new utility lines that's being released in 2025 here. And the numbers that I see on it, if it's the incumbent utility that's building those power lines, that the money that they put into that can go into the system, which means that not just Wisconsin ratepayers are paying for it. It's Illinois ratepayers. It's Iowa ratepayers. It's Minnesota ratepayers. So it has the potential to save Wisconsin ratepayers hundreds of millions of dollars over the next 20, 30 years just because of federal money that's coming into the state over the next year or a couple years in utility lines. So, you know, I want to save my ratepayers money. I think it needs to get done.
Rising costs were certainly a theme in November elections. You've talked about the rising cost of groceries. Also, people talked about childcare, housing. You have been an advocate for the hospital transparency bill because healthcare, rising costs of healthcare. WMC just released a survey. Their employers say that's the number one thing that state government can do would be to address healthcare costs. What's the status of that bill, and do you think it'll move this session?
So, healthcare has been a huge issue. And we heard about it on the campaign trail. I had a meeting on this yesterday, so this is very timely. It's not just hospital price transparency, though. We have a package of health care bills that are going to be coming out in the Senate, PBM reform, WEO, an all-payer claims database, hospital price transparency, an insurance price transparency bill. So we will be taking a deep dive into healthcare and rising costs, and I really hope that we can get a number of them across the finish line.
Is there bipartisan support on this issue and these proposals?
Yes. There was last session, and I am hoping that they will be bipartisan again this session, because I think it has become the hidden tax, not only on employers, but on constituents also.
You mentioned early in our interview about the governor's proposal for citizen-led initiatives to put items on the ballot and how that was policy you'd be pulling out from the budget. Is that your first order of business in the Senate was to pass a constitutional amendment that will be on the mm-hmm. April ballot. Mm-hmm. Is a citizen-led initiative a bad idea for Wisconsin overall?
You know, our founders set up a pretty beautiful form of government here, a representative republic in our nation, and understood that a direct democracy could pose challenges where the majority has the opportunity to vote in rights for themselves or against the minority. And that's sort of what a referendum by ballot initiative could lead to. Plus, it can be you have special interests who parachute into a state, get the amount of signatures, try frame the issue in their way, whereas when you have a piece of legislation, an important piece, or even when we do the constitutional amendment, it has to make it through two sessions of the legislature.
Right.
We have committee hearings on it. People can come in and share their concerns with it. If it's just, you know, some special interest putting a proposition, like in California where they have all kinds of them every time. Maybe it sounds good on paper, but if you don't vet it, if it doesn't go through the committee process, if people in different industries don't get to weigh in on, well, this might not be the best idea. If we don't have to have a governor sign it with, you know, most legislation. I think the legislative process, for as messy as it can be at times, actually gets a lot of good results.
Issues like legalizing medical marijuana are very popular with Wisconsinites. It maybe would, a citizen-led initiative maybe would have already moved that issue.
Full legalization would have moved already. But I will tell you this. I go to a lot of think tanks, you know, like NCOIL or ALEC or NCSL, and I have talked to legislators who have ballot initiatives. Think of this. This happened in Michigan. Total nightmare. That's how they get marijuana legislation in Colorado. Today it's illegal, tomorrow it's legal. No framework, nothing is in place. And every legislator that I've always talked to said it's a nightmare for the state. It's a nightmare for law enforcement. It's a nightmare for legislators. It's a nightmare for the regulators. Even the people that are now trying to become into the business. It sounds good. As Devin said, it sounds great. Let's, you know, we'll do this. But it's not vetted, and it becomes very, very hard. I know sometimes the legislative process is very frustrating to people, but how many times is a bill introduced, it starts through the committee process, and it's amended because we figured out unintended consequences? Or if, you know, it's like whack-a-mole. We do this. Shared revenue is a perfect example. I can't tell you how many times we would move the needle here, and then we'd figure out this is going to happen. So then you're back and forth, and you're back and forth. There's so many amendments to that bill. It went through drafting so many times because of that committee process and because of the vetting that we did.
Final question for both of you. What are you most looking forward to about this session?
Well, I'm looking forward to cutting taxes. But when you start every new session, you know, it's sort of exciting. You know, we don't have any new caucus members this time, but we have new senators that we get to meet and get to know. But it, you know, it's exciting starting a new session. Brand new slate, new bills going through the process.
And a budget.
You know, a lot of times we have new staff working in our offices. You know, we have little different districts, getting to know the new parts of your district. So
makes January go more quickly?
Yes. Yes.
What are you looking forward to?
Well, the new role of president. So I did leave the top two staffers in my office. You know, they went into the private sector. So I have new staff in my office, plus I have more staff in my office. New role. So it's getting up to speed on that. Devin's office has been awesome helping out on that. It's excited. I think we can get some really good reforms done in the state. I see us cutting taxes, putting out a really good, responsible budget, and doing some reforms around health care and some other things, and just really moving Wisconsin in the right direction.
All right. Thank you to both of you. Have a great 2025.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
You have been watching a production of Wisconsin Eye, your unfiltered window into legislative deliberations and public policy programming, where our mission is to provide Wisconsinites an opportunity to access the legislative process and connect with conversations that inform our citizenry. Please consider supporting our mission, and thank you for watching. Wisconsin Eye, policy made public. Nicolet Bank is honored to support all who strive to make communities great.